So now every Afghan boy and girl, from preschool to the 9th grade, can access the same lessons as Iranians do. Rahmatullah Baghban, Kabul.
Bedouin Palestinians have been living in the Naqab Desert for decades, even before the creation of Israel. It's home to tens of thousands of residents who view these lands as privately owned. Still, Israel has refused to recognize these Palestinian inhabitants and is now claiming that the lands have been registered and belong to the Israeli regime. The latest incursion into Bedouin territories gave rise to a fresh round of escalation, with angry Palestinians turning out, saying the Israeli forestation project is not but an excuse to force them out of their land.
The goal of the tree planting is to prevent the expansion of the Bedouin villages, to prevent a future recognition in our villages, and this action is somewhat political. The extreme right wing used it to spoil the relationship between Jews and Arabs in this place. We say to them, this is our land, these are our villages, we've been here for hundreds and thousands of years, and we will simply not move from this place.
The crackdown turned violent in no time, with Israeli forces targeting the Palestinian demonstrators with all they had, from rubber-coated bullets and tear gas to stun grenades and skunk water. Palestinian families have been living in constant fear and apprehension due to Israel's forced displacements. A controversial case has been the Sheikh Jarrah neighborhood. Israel has for some time been seeking the expulsion of several Palestinian families from their houses in Sheikh Jarrah neighborhood of East Al-Quds, in what pro-Palestine groups have been seeing as the continuation of Israel's attempts at ethnic cleansing and Judaization of Palestinian territories. And the regime's demolition of Palestinian residences and businesses has turned into an almost daily occurrence. Palestinians say settlements built on occupied territory will get in the way of them building their future state. They have demanded that Israel freeze all settlement activity if it wants the peace process to resume. But Israel is pushing ahead, taking no heed of those demands. Some experts believe Israel has been planning from the start to expand and perpetuate its occupation, and the two-state solution was never an option for the Tel Aviv to begin with.
There was never a plan for a future Palestinian state. A two-state solution, so-called, is not a solution, it's a delusion. And it's an illusion that was instituted by Ben-Gurion in the 1920s.
All these developments take place as the international community plays the role of a silent witness of the Israeli colonial policies. And all these Palestinian pleas for help and justice are falling on deaf ears. That has many wondering what can be done to make the world quit its role as a silent observer of the injustice that's been committed against Palestinians.
In the limelight.
Perhaps peace in the UN jargon means the conquest of Yemen by Saudi Arabia and the UAE with their unending supply of state-of-the-art weapons from the US, Britain and France, coupled with the total subjugation of the poor people of Yemen as the slaves of the West and even of the illegal Zionist entity. Dear listeners, what you heard was part of an article written by Kayhan, International Staff Writer. This article is published under the heading World Mom on Saudi-UAE War Crimes in Yemen. Stay tuned for more. If the UN could live up to its designated role of neutrality by avoiding any words or actions indicating its preference for any of the parties involved in armed conflicts, then only can it restore its lost trust and infuse confidence in the belligerents regarding the benefits of diplomatic solutions to war and bloodshed. The defenders of Yemen's independence and sovereignty in the face of the state terrorism of Saudi Arabia and the UAE have often complained about what they say open partially of the world body in its reluctance to denounce the death and destruction wrought on their homeland for the past 7 years by the above-mentioned invaders, while passing resolutions to prevent the government in Sana'a from acquiring the necessary means of defense to shoot down enemy aircraft. The events of the past few days lend credence to the claims of Yemen's Popular Ansarullah movement, which has unjustly been called rebels for protecting the country from turning into a satellite of the Saudi UAE due of aggressors, which are awash with oil wealth and in servitude to the US and Britain, seem to have the license to slaughter the people of Yemen without any accountability. Almost every other day, the Saudi warplanes, without the least fear of meeting any anti-aircraft fire, rain down bombs on residential and commercial areas and the civilian structure of the towns and cities of Yemen, while the world watches in silence their state terrorism and the West continues its supply of more lethal arms. The moment, however, the Yemeni army exercises its right to retaliate against war crimes by firing a few missiles or drones on the military and industrial sites of the aggressors, its defensive actions are condemned in the strongest possible words by not just the invaders but their supporters worldwide. This became more evident recently when, after days of warning the UAE to desist from its war crimes in Yemen by funding mercenaries to continue the bloodshed, the government in Sana'a targeted a section of the Abu Dhabi airport where the military is based and set ablaze a few fuel tanks in Al Musafa area. Immediately, pandemonium was let loose, as the US, the UK, and their client regimes leaped through the defense of the UAE and Saudi Arabia by denouncing the warning shot fired by the defenders of Yemen, with more to follow. What was most unfortunate, however, was the reaction of the United Nations Secretary General, whose words, instead of defusing the crisis, might fuel it and make the perpetrators of the Yemen war more impudent in committing more war crimes. Antonio Guterres's spokesperson, Stephane Dujarric, released his official statement saying the UN Secretary General condemns the suspected drone attacks and calls on all parties to exercise maximum restraint and prevent any escalation, adding, "Attacks on civilians and civilian infrastructure are prohibited by international humanitarian law." Why the UN chief does not use these same words when the Saudis daily attack the civilian infrastructure of Yemen and indiscriminately slaughter the defenseless men, women, and children of Yemen? this is not the end of the story. Then came the ferocious bombing of Sana'a and cities by Saudi warplanes in the early morning hours of Tuesday, that is January 17th, and the death of at least 20 people, including an entire family. But sadly, no country denounced the latest war crime by Riyadh. Even Mr. Antonio Guterres decided to look the other way. Perhaps peace in the UN jargon means the conquest of Yemen by Saudi Arabia and the UAE with their unending supply of state-of-the-art weapons from the US, Britain and France, coupled with the total subjugation of the poor people of Yemen as the slaves of the West and even of the illegal Zionist entity.
Fiqh or jurisprudence is an Islamic knowledge and is ranked
the Holy Prophet of Islam is the example
of
self-purification is the most significant
factor.
Imamate is a living principle in the history of Islam and Shiism.
This is Ulama Speech, the best selection of the speeches of prominent Shia scholars.
In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful, welcome to another episode of the program Ulama's Speech. In this episode, we invite you to listen to the English translation of a shorter speech by Hujjatul Islam Rafi'i. Stay tuned.
قرآن کریم به پیغمبر گرامی اسلام می‌فرماید به مسلمان ها بگو
Allah in the Holy Quran Surah At-Tawbah Ayah 55 states, So let not their wealth and children impress you. Allah only desires to punish them with these in the life of this world, and that their souls may depart while they are faithless. A true example of such people in this ayah was Walid, the polytheist at the time of Prophet Muhammad. He was mean to an extent that in Surah Mudassir, his thoughts are cursed several times by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. He was the person who called Prophet Muhammad a sorcerer. Walid was wealthy and had many sons who were all healthy and helping their father.
قرآن به مسلمان میگه به پیغمبر میفرماید لا تعجب که
However, in Surah Toba, Ayah 55, Allah wants the people not to be impressed by wealth and children of the people like Wali, because this will make them faithless. There are many people like Wali in today's world too, the people who are competing for more money and power, the people who compare themselves with others only in terms of financial and materialistic wealth. The religion of Islam is absolutely against comparison made based on money and wealth. On the contrary, if we compare our conditions with those who are lower than us, we are always thankful to Allah and we never feel poor or needy. Thank you very much, dear listeners of iRab English Radio, for listening to this episode of the program Ulama's Speech, which was the English translation of a short speech by Hujjatul Islam Rafi'i. To find out more about this program, log on to our website www.parstoday.com/Call of Islam page. We leave you in Allah's care and goodbye.
From the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
The 8-year defense of Iranian combatants.
A senior Iranian lawmaker has said,
contrary to Washington's claims, America's
President Raisi has emphasized that
U.S. sanctions have failed to extract concessions from Tehran.
Iran Today.
Clashes between security forces and drug traffickers along Iran's eastern border with Afghanistan and Pakistan is a part of the natural scene. But Iran is putting its foot down now in demanding international cooperation in fighting what's actually a global problem. This country has lost enough financial and, more importantly, human resources and youth in tackling the problem. And its resources are thinning. Iran's neighbors are many and its borders varied. So single-handedly handling incoming smuggled goods and people is not easy. For a look at the issue of border security and the drug and smuggling problem, stay with me, Leila Faramarzi, on Iran Today. The economically challenged Sistan and Baluchistan province in Iran's southeast is perhaps the greatest go-to zone for smugglers and no-go zone for everybody else. It has been an ongoing scene of occasional clashes between government forces and not just drug traffickers but some militant groups. It is where Jaish al-Adl, a separatist group affiliated with Al-Qaeda, operates. Gunmen wanted by Iranian law have used Pakistan as their safe haven to organize and train, just simply crossing over into that neighboring country. Dr. Yazdan Panah is a geopolitics professor who analyzes issues with a look to geostrategic details surrounding them. We met him at the geography faculty of Tehran University.
تامین امنیت مرزها معمولا یک رابطه دو سویه بین دو کشور.
Establishing border security usually requires joint efforts between the two nations. One of the challenges Iran is facing is that it has too many neighbors. We have 15 neighbors, making us the world's third among countries with the most neighbors. This makes things more difficult for us. Bilateral ties determine the security of the borders. Iran shares 9,000 kilometers of border, 8,863 kilometers of which is a common border with its neighbors. There is a stretch along rivers, across mountainous areas, vast deserts, and sea crossings. Iran has these complex border areas. The reason you're looking for should be investigated by examining the structure of the shared borders.
The geographical location of the country, particularly its 1,923-kilometer-long eastern border with Afghanistan, the world's largest illicit opium producer, and Pakistan, has turned it into a major transit country for illicit drugs. In response to this challenge, the country has built one of the strongest counter-narcotics enforcement capabilities in the region over the years. Dr. Fallahi is an MP on several parliamentary committees, which means she gets to observe how things are panning out on the field. She shared her views at her office in Bahoristan, home to parliament or majlis.
The Islamic Republic of Iran is perhaps one of the few countries in the world that have been paying human and financial costs fighting the smuggling, especially drug trafficking. But unfortunately, it doesn't have the capacity nor the facilities to stop the transit that's also affecting other nations. European countries have made promises to provide Iran with equipment and facilities and pay for some of the costs, but this hasn't happened yet. If this trend continues, although we'll be affected somehow, other countries will suffer the consequences. If you don't stop it at the origin, you'll find yourself in major trouble.
The UNODC World Drug Report of 2021 estimates that in 2019, 90% of the world opium, 72% of the world morphine, and 20% of the world heroin were seized by Iran. This country spends millions of dollars annually on border control, which includes constructing barriers along its borders with Afghanistan and Pakistan. We got to make a visit to the anti-narcotics headquarters in northwest Tehran for a chat with its spokesperson, Dr. Lotfi. Here's what we heard at the source of the action.
We've stated the equipment we need in a letter to the United Nations and to the Executive Director of the UNODC, Ms. Kada Fatiwali, who also has the UN's Vienna office. There's a wide range of equipment we need, but the most important are border management and control systems. Today, countries can no longer protect their borders by building walls and putting up fences. For example, in some geographical areas, there are sandy deserts that are constantly moving. This means that building walls isn't a viable option.
Of countless accounts, a particular incident cannot be forgotten as it marks New Year in tragedy. On January the 1st, 2022, Iran lost three guard members as they clashed with an armed criminal gang in the southeast. The bloody event left at least five bandits dead too. Last July also, armed bandits shot and killed four guard members in the same province, Sistan-Baluchistan.
If they don't help us today, they'd be facing a deluge of migrants, drugs and terrorists tomorrow. The Islamic Republic of Iran is not acting as their representatives, but it's been located at the forefront of the fight and in a way is acting as a barrier preventing those from reaching other nations. If they don't help us with that, they'll have to deal with troubles in their capitals later on.
Armed outlaws and smugglers ramped up their act in the borders and central and eastern provinces of Iran beginning in 2021. And by armed, I mean equipped with all kinds of smart weapons and heavy equipment, leaving Iranian police soldiers to fight an unequal battle. Given it's the equipment as well as the cost of preventive measures, while this country is under US sanctions.
If major Western powers hadn't been behind the drug mafia in Afghanistan, the situation there wouldn't have been like this. That holds true about weapons trafficking and many other destabilizing issues that are caused by external forces in the region. They've brought instability wherever they go, but because of their media imperialism and power, they're portrayed as the good guys.
Some 40 Iranian police officers lost their lives in clashes with armed traffickers and outlaws between March the 21st and December the 3rd, 2021. This brought me to the question, has Iran been left alone as part of the general norm with the West, or do Western powers just not care about really fighting drug cartels which actually pay for their wars?
The US spent billions of dollars in Afghanistan. It doesn't come as a surprise if Washington wanted part of its money back. What could be better for them than using Afghanistan's natural climate for cultivating poppy and officially recognizing it as having medicinal uses to export it to the US and other nations? The Americans were behind a 13-fold jump in poppy cultivation in Afghanistan, but they don't believe that they have affected the illegal drugs market around the world. They would argue that Afghanistan's farms are perfect for poppy, and cultivating any other plant won't be financially reasonable. Therefore, to keep the Afghan economy going and keep people employed so they won't join the Taliban and conduct operations against them, and at the same time earn back a bit of funds they spent on Afghanistan, they chose to cultivate and sell poppy.
Western parties to the Iran nuclear deal, or JCPOA, delayed talks to press Iran into further commitments of scrapping its ballistic missile program and pulling out of involvement in its own region. So I asked if Iran couldn't demand as little as help with a problem that is European as much as Iranian, given Iran is a direct natural smuggling route from Afghanistan to Europe. Saying that, it's a passage Iran has controlled at the source to secure Europe from an influx of drugs and immigrants.
Fighting drug trafficking by the Islamic Republic is totally different from that in Europe. Iran is the first frontier. Drug trafficking is interrelated with other issues, including terrorism, border clashes and the like, and constitutes threats to Iran's national security. I have this question for the European and Western nations. How do you treat those who threaten your national security? Do you treat them peacefully, out of humanitarian considerations? I don't think so.
Talking of controlling smuggling routes, the use of maritime routes for the trafficking of drugs and illicit chemicals from and to the region has become a big since 2012. That alone poses a major challenge to border control.
The other thing relates to maritime border security issues. Maritime borders are partly determined by international conventions, including the 1982 United Nations Convention on the Law of the Sea, which is approved by all countries that have coasts, including those connected to international waters. There you can clearly see how major powers are contributing to this. The reason is also clear. The smuggling is done partly by major powers, those that manufacture products in bulk but can't sell them in lucrative markets like that of the West Asia. That makes smuggling quite attractive for them.
While Afghanistan is the number one narcotics producer, its neighbor Iran is the world's number one drug buster, with a high addiction rate of its own. UNODC, the United Nations Office on Drugs and Crime, hails Iran's leading role at a global level in drug control campaigns, and it even gave this country first place in the discovery of heroin, morphine, and opium. According to UN figures of 2000, Afghanistan produced about 200 tons of narcotics, but by 2018, it had grown to 9,500 tons. In other words, the production of narcotics had increased 50-fold, which doubled the need for prevention efforts. As an example of ties between Afghanistan and Iran today, in Nimruz, smugglers carry goods from potatoes to fertilizer and fuel from Iran into Afghanistan. And from Afghanistan, the world's largest heroin and opium exporter, others bring drugs and humans into Iran. As with Iran, U.S. sanctions on Afghanistan have hampered trade with Europe and states south of the Persian Gulf. And so, Iranian business has filled the vacancy, leaving well over 50% of supermarket shelves stashed with Iranian products. Time for a short break. We'll be back in no time.
This is Iran Today. Iran Today is broadcast every week on Fridays and Saturdays. This series analyzes major political, economic, cultural, and social events concerning Iran. So don't miss the opportunity to listen to Iran Today on IRIB English Radio.
Looking at the martyrdom of over 3,800 individuals and the injury of more than 12,000 members of Iranian law enforcement forces only in the field of counter-narcotic plans, Kazem Gharibabadi, Iran's Deputy Judiciary Chief for International Affairs, was moved to write a letter to the UN High Commissioner for Human Rights. That would be Michelle Bachelet. Coming up after the news review section with Mohammed to portray a more positive picture of the border and trafficking situation in telling of unity among forces, neighboring countries and civilian residents.
I'm Mohammed Ghor and welcome to another news section. Generally speaking, protecting a country's borders from illegal movement of weapons, drugs, contraband and even people while promoting lawful entry and exit is essential to security, economic prosperity, and national sovereignty. And so in this episode, we're taking a look at Iran and its fight against drug trafficking and the heavy price and challenges of border security. First, we have a report by Al Monitor titled Iranian Border Leader Visits Pakistan and Participates in Defense Exercises. The article, which was released after the head of Iran's border guard visited Pakistan on January 12th, says Brigadier General Ahmad Ali Gudarzi arrived in the Pakistani port city of Karachi to meet with defense officials and partake in a maritime training exercise. He met with Rear Admiral Mirza Fahd Amin Beg, who heads Pakistan's maritime security agency. Gudarzi called for increased cooperation between Iran and Pakistan on their maritime border in the Arabian Sea. He specifically mentioned rescue operations, fighting crime, and deterring illegal immigration. Gudarzi also came to Pakistan to participate in the Pakistani military maritime defense exercise. The drill focused on several security-related exercises, including oil drill responses and security operations. Meanwhile, Tasnim has released a report on the matter titled, Top General Hails Sustainable Security at Iran's Southeast Border. The article reports Chief of Staff of the Iranian Armed Forces Major General Mohammad Hossein Bagheri saying the Iranian military forces' strong performance has led to sustainable security along the country's southeastern frontiers. Speaking to reporters after 2 days of visits to the border areas in Iran's southeastern province of Sistan and Baluchistan, Major General Bagheri said the situation at the boundaries has improved remarkably and the security along the southeastern frontiers has become growingly better in the recent years. Highlighting Iran's perfect intelligence and operational control over the border areas, the commanders said the unwavering efforts by the police border and RGC forces have resulted in the reduction of crimes, insecurity, and drug trafficking in Sistan and Baluchistan. The general added, fortunately, Pakistan has also taken appropriate measures in building border barriers, developing police stations, and increasing the number of border guards, and is working in full coordination with the Islamic Republic of Iran's border guards. Another report by Tasnim cites an Iranian commander saying Iranian armed forces' deterrent power is evident in border areas. The commander of the Islamic Revolution Guard Corps, RGC Ground Force, underlined the unity of the armed forces in ensuring the country's security and said their deterrent might is manifest along the country's borders. Speaking at a ceremony in the northeastern city of Mashhad, Brigadier General Mohammad Pakpur described unity and collaboration among the army, RGC, and police as a necessary infrastructure of ensuring security in the country. Thanks to the unity and constructive and sincere cooperation, the manifestations of the Iranian armed forces' deterrent power is evident all over the country's border areas, he stated. The senior commander also hailed the active contribution of residents of border areas in upholding security, which he said has frightened the counter-revolutionary elements. Thanks for joining me in this episode's news section. And now, back to Layla.
Here's what Ghali Babaji wrote. I expect you, Madam Commissioner, to counter the instrumental, politicized and selective approach in the field of human rights. Apart from condemning illegal and unilateral sanctions against the Iranian people, especially in providing the necessary equipment for the police forces in their unequal campaign against terrorist groups and international traffickers, as well as condemning the martyrdom of law enforcement personnel by these groups and traffickers.
In a joint action with the judiciary, we announced the 40 deaths to the UN officers. By documenting this issue, we want to remind the West that they're taking a selective and contradictory approach towards Iran. While Iran is dealing with these issues and paying the costs, they refuse to help under excuses ranging from humanitarian issues to sanctions. The sanctions are posing challenges for us. We can't get the equipment our drug control headquarters and security and law enforcement agencies need because of the sanctions.
Iranians are alarmed over Afghan drug traffickers crossing into Iranian territory. However, in August of 2021, Jalal Settar, a deputy commander of the Iranian Police Border Guard, stressed that Afghan immigrants are treated with respect and dignity and are often returned to their home country. Every day, an average of 2,000 Afghan nationals are requesting to enter Iran from the borders, he said. That's because they fear a new civil war since the Taliban took over the capital Kabul on August the 16th. Although the Taliban have promised to establish a comprehensive government comprised of all ethnic groups.
There are many challenges threatening our borders, but there are some major ones, including migrants coming in from countries that can't create ideal living conditions for them, like Afghanistan, where one group has taken the helm of the country and is yet to form an inclusive government. The other is smuggling both goods and drug trafficking. Smuggling goods can severely affect and undermine the rules and regulations of our economy.
In the meantime, a lack of a regional organization dedicated to fighting trafficking is dearly felt. In my opinion, Iran should convince regional countries to form an organization against the smuggling. The same thing that Europe has done with its three institutions that even monitor the entry of migrants who can be stranded for months along European borders. A considerable number of the migrants are usually deported despite getting there after making dangerous journeys through the Mediterranean, which kills thousands of them. The European institutions are responsible to prevent this.
All said, the border police official Settare expressed an added concern, warning of plots by the United States against Iran in cooperation with its puppets in certain states in the southern shores of the Persian Gulf.
Iran can't convince the international community with mere words. In my opinion, to put pressure on them, Tehran must open a free corridor for them so the Western nations that are consumers of illegal drugs can understand what Iran is up against. It's no joke. Iran has been paying $5 billion a year to fight illegal drugs. That's apart from the human cost. That is killing 1 to 1.5 law enforcement officers every day.
On the Pakistani side, end 2021, General Qamar Javed Bajwa described terrorism as a common enemy of Iran and Pakistan, stressing the need to activate a joint committee on border security. He also stressed the need for closer cooperation with Iran on issues relating to Afghanistan, especially in the fight against terrorism. Over the past decades in Iran, the use of drugs has been a major source of social harm, such as divorce, crime, and infectious disease. To combat the present rise, in spite of conditions caused by the coronavirus and harsh sanctions, drug detection increased by 41% in 2020, thanks to efforts by anti-narcotics police.
The international community's actions haven't been proportional to what the Islamic Republic of Iran has been doing. As I told you earlier, Iran has been spending $1 billion a year to fight this, but the United Nations contributions have been something between $12 to $15 million. Compare this sum with the budget Iran is spending.
To take a look at police action in the capital, in May 2021, the Iranian border police got to seize more than 38 kilograms of various types of drugs from individual traffickers at Imam Khomeini International Airport. That was by means of the new body scanner secured by UNODC Iran from the donating government of Japan. There was a considerable 250% increase in drug seizure since installation of this new device by the end of the Iranian year 1399. That's 20th March 2021.
One of the excuses they make for their politicized and selective approach is the Islamic Republic's harsh treatment of drug traffickers. I think this is an excuse because the West disregards two issues. First, Iran considers distinctions in dealing with people involved in the illegal drugs trade, the addict, who we call substance abuser, and the other is the trafficker. The West doesn't recognize the difference in our dealings with the two types of people. Iran, in its comprehensive document for treatment and prevention of drug abuse, recognizes the right of treatment for addicts. The harsh response is aimed at traffickers.
To move westwards in showing the Iranian challenge cross-country, in May 2021, an Iranian officer was martyred in a clash with armed outlaws trying to cross the country's western border in Kurdistan province. Iranian troops were patrolling the borderline in Dadanakhi region near Marivan when the armed clash erupted, General Alireza Marzbani said. The border guards did inflict heavy losses on the hostile armed elements in the clash, sending intruders fleeing to the mountainous areas on the other side of the border. The Iranian border police, the IRGC ground force, and the army ground force are tasked with protecting Iran's land borders. This country does have more than 6,000 kilometers of common land borders with Pakistan, Afghanistan, Armenia, Turkmenistan, the Republic of Azerbaijan, Turkey, and Iraq.
Considering the enormity of the threats, we believe we have to decide on the defense and security budget separately from the public budget. We need to manage the security budget before dealing with expenditures and revenues. We believe that we must not allow our defensive powers to be undermined. Armed and security forces can do their jobs well if they are concerned about their economic and financial security.
That'll be it for today. Thanks from the whole team. With any results or new incidents, we'll do another show on the same. Bye for now.
Cultural news, social news, scientific news, artistic news. With delight.
Disability is not an obstacle to success. A group of Japanese with disabilities has proved it as they create incredible handicraft and make a living this way. A shop called Amayaka offers the items made by these disabled individuals. Located in a Tokyo neighborhood, it showcases products ranging from scarves and bags to glassware and colorful carts. Mayaka and all other workshops are part of a new movement aimed at promoting works of people with impairment. In just one of the workshops cooperating with Mayaka, about 20 disabled people are working over there. However, organizers of the movement say these people are still invisible in the society and are not paid fairly for their works despite being experienced in craftsmanship.
Some workers here have a career of more than 30 years. They have been weaving since their school days. They are so experienced that we should refer to them as artisans.
The organizers say they hope that their initiative will promote the works of the people with disabilities and help the society to start thinking about the way disabled workers are being treated. Turtles get a second chance to spread their fins after being found with bellies full of plastic. They were rescued and are now being released back to the sea in Argentina. Two green turtles and four loggerhead turtles were saved from fishing nets in Buenos Aires province. The group was taken to Grupo Marina Foundation, where they recuperated after purging 10 types of plastic from their bodies. Rehabilitation of the turtles lasted over a month and included blood tests and other procedures to make sure they were free of plastic. A biologist with the foundation says the danger of plastic is that it's silent and usually its dangers are so gradual that it goes unnoticed.
Many times the animal appears to be in perfect health. However, during the checkup and evaluation, we found a large amount of this material inside. So it is important to get rid of the plastic before the condition worsens and it ends up causing the deaths of the specimens.
The turtles had mistakenly eaten plastic, thinking it was food. Wind, waves, and sunshine break down discarded plastic into tiny pieces, which litter ocean waters. Much of this plastic waste can be found on beds of seaweed that turtles forage for food. This trash ends up fatally clogging their bellies, causing the decline in the population of this graceful reptile. The Indian administered Kashmir has the world's only floating post office. A 200-year-old houseboat on a famous Dal Lake in Srinagar, set up during the British rule in India. The post office has survived throughout the years because of its charm. Our correspondent Shahana Bhatt has more.
The Indian administered Kashmir was once a princely independent state, out of bounds for outsiders. As the ruler of Jammu and Kashmir disallowed non-locals to own property in this picturesque region. During the British rule in the Indian subcontinent, many Britons tried to find an alternative way of living in Kashmir. Thus, houseboat on the world-famous Dal Lake came into existence. Today, the lake is a home to hundreds of such boats, which are a major attraction for tourists around the globe. This one is a unique boat, the only floating post office in the whole world. This is a 200-year-old boat built by the British. It has truly stood the test of time as it still functions.
Post office, Dal Lake.
This is not an ordinary post office. We're standing on a heritage property. I've enjoyed my work since the very first day I came here. It's a unique experience to be working here. And every day, I get the chance to meet people from different corners of the world.
The boat is not limited to postal services. It also has a small museum where colorful stamps from the 1980s are put to display, along with a collection of rare philately stamps. The post office is a hot tourist destination in the region. Locals also come to this post office to send postcards to their loved ones, inviting them to visit Kashmir.
Floating post office.
In the age of technology, electronic mails, e-cards and other internet applications have made it extremely easy for people to communicate. But sending a postcard from this floating post office gives one a really different feeling.
The floating post office underwent reconstruction in 2011 and is currently a part of the Indian postal system. Recently, the office started offering banking services, thus attracting more locals.
I have opened an account here for my daughter. It's hassle-free and this place suits my mind. It's not like the usual offices. Visiting this place with kids is like a trip.
Yet another attraction of this post office is this souvenir shop, from where everyone can buy postcards, stamps, traditional crafts and greeting cards.
This floating post office in Kashmir's Dal Lake is like a time machine. It brings people back to 2 centuries ago and shows them the history of the beautiful region. Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Now let's go to Germany to hear the heartwarming story of how technology is turning a young boy's life around. 7-year-old Joshua has a severe lung disease which has made him unable to go to school. But now he can attend his classes from home with the help of an avatar robot. The device sits in Joshua's Berlin classroom, enabling him to listen to the classroom in real time to what his teacher and classmates are saying. Joshua can even interact with everyone else by making the robot display a blinking signal.
The Light is a bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news and more from every corner of the world.
Each year, a village in Vietnam becomes awash in red and orange as it gears up for the Lunar New Year with spectacular mass production of incense. January is usually the busiest time when villagers are dyeing, drying and whittling bamboo bark to make the fragrance sticks. Also, the scent of each batch is carefully tailored to suit the tastes of the regions where they will be sold. Most households here are involved in this ancient trade and sales are a major part of their livelihoods. The Lunar New Year will begin on the first day of February. Around this time, sales tick up with throngs of people crowding into temples to light incense during worship. A 3-year-old girl from China's Hebei province has astonished ski enthusiasts with her impressive snowboarding talent.
Hello everybody, I'm Wang Shishi. I'm 3 years old and I can snowboard now.
Shishi's skills have attracted a lot of attention as a toddler boldly tackles the slopes. She makes snowboarding look easy. Despite her tender age, she is already taming the slopes at a higher skill level than a number of other aspiring snowboarders. Her parents say she has been practicing for less than 2 weeks and her progress is startling.
I remember several years ago, I felt quite scared when I was on the advanced slope. But a mother told me that Shishi started to snowboard down right when she got to the advanced trail. She was not afraid at all.
Her parents say she quickly grasped the snowboarding movements and techniques, including some of the trickier swivels and turns. They say Shishi is enjoying the progress she is making on the slopes, and every chance she gets, she asks to go snowboarding. The young snowboarder's mum says the hobby has also brought the family closer together as they enjoy a shared passion together.
The chronic shortage of human organs has always been an issue for patients, especially those suffering from heart diseases. But now a major scientific breakthrough is in the making. U.S. surgeons have successfully implanted a heart from a genetically modified pig into a man. Doctors had said the patient, 57-year-old, was unable to have human transplant because of his health conditions. But now he is recovering from his latest surgery. The surgeons say the man is being carefully monitored to determine how the new organ is performing. But for those who want to know why pigs, here is why. Pigs are considered ideal donors because of their size and rapid growth, among other things.
You know, it is a game changer because, you know, now we will have these organs readily available. If this works, and, you know, and I hope it will work, then we'll have these organs available. We can, you know, we have the technique of genetically modifying. So if there are more tweaking required for modifying the genes, we will be able to do that. And, you know, can you know, customize basically the heart for or the organ for the patient.
The transplant is the first of its kind in the world and follows years of research. In the U.S. alone, about 110,000 people are currently waiting for an organ transplant. Also, more than 6,000 patients die each year before getting one. A kingdom of ice and snow. Don't be surprised, it's an international sculpture festival held annually in the Chinese city of Harbin. This year the venue brims with sports elements in a runner-up to the 2022 Winter Olympics scheduled in Beijing. The annual Winter Festival is the largest of its kind, where sculptors spend weeks using ice and snow to create structures under a given theme. The upcoming Winter Games is the theme this year, as one can visualize giant statues of Bing Duan Duan. The adorable panda mascots are major attractions of the exhibition. The chief designer says an ice tower standing in the center of the park features 24 vertical structures, referring to the 24th Winter Olympics.
In terms of the design concept, the sculpture features 24 vertical structures referring to the 24th Winter Olympics to be held in Beijing. The spiral array form also indicated the proactive spirit of the Olympics. The free and upward effect is a vivid presentation of the Olympic flame.
The annual festival, which is being held for about 3 decades, usually attracts domestic and foreign tourists. But COVID-19 restrictions have limited the crowds over the past couple of years. Harbin is located in northeast China and receives cold winter wind from Siberia. An average winter temperature there is around minus 17 degrees Celsius.
South Koreans enjoy a wildlife refuge near the Korean Demilitarized Zone. New tours opened in November from the DMZ Crane Peace Town. Frank Smith has more in this report.
A new hiking trail and birdwatching facility opened up in South Korea this past November. DMZ Crane Peace Town created special birding cabins and guides wilderness hikes north of the 38th parallel, near the DMZ, the fortified border with North Korea. The Demilitarized Zone was created with the armistice that ended the Korean War back in 1953. Guard post fencing and a 2 to 4 kilometer wide buffer zone now separate North Korea and South Korea, with that no man's land becoming home to rejuvenated plant and wildlife. Local officials see wildlife tourism as an opportunity to promote inter-Korean peace.
Cranes know no borders. That's why we're promoting the crane as a symbol of peace, as they can freely come and go between North and South Korea.
Each winter, several species of birds, especially cranes, spend time to rest and feed in the area, where there's little development and few people. Officials say more birds have been coming here because of depleted feeding grounds in the north.
Shirwan has wide plains suitable for growing rice. Cranes eat the grain that has fallen after harvest, and it's the best place for cranes because it's located north of the civilian control line.
A safe vantage point to photograph the wildlife is provided at the Hantan River near Yangji Village, attracting birders from far afield.
I left home at 4 in the morning to come here to photograph wild birds, swans and cranes. It's good because there are many mallard ducks and other birds. They fight for food with each other, but it's fun.
Cranes are considered a sacred symbol of longevity and fortune here and designated a national monument. Frank Smith, Cherwon County, South Korea.
www.parstoday.com/en